Thank you. It's great to be here. And Senator Brandis, I really appreciate some of your discussions. And I think the theme we heard is being proactive rather than reactive. And David is right. I'm finishing actually my second year of my first term. I was elected in 2022. And I've tried to focus on policies that are proactive and address some of the things that I know are really important to the people in St. Petersburg and Pinellas Park and Pinellas County and our state. So I'd like to go over some of those priorities, some of those initiatives that I've been taking on, and then kind of address from my perspective some of the things that I've heard from the senator and some of the questions, but looking at some of the things that I've been able to accomplish and bring up to Tallahassee based on my more than 20 years experience as an environmental scientist, working on water quality issues, working on conservation, in places like Tampa Bay, helping to improve our water quality from a place where more than half of the seagrass had died to having better water quality than we did in the 1970s and 1980s. So with that background, I have focused on some things related to water quality, conservation, and what I consider a lack of smart growth and planning in our state. One bill that I sponsored this year would require the state to begin looking at how we're investing in infrastructure upgrades, particularly for wastewater treatment plants. Every year, the state allocates $200, $300 million for water projects, and then there's appropriation projects that go to individual members and their districts for stormwater, for water quality improvement, but there is no strategy behind that. I know that one of the reasons why Tampa Bay is healthier now than it was decades ago is because of policies that were passed in the early 1980s that required the Tampa Bay region to treat our water to a higher level, to something called advanced wastewater treatment. And there are many parts of the state that are not at advanced wastewater treatment at AWT. And I think that regardless of where you live, you should have clean water. You should be able to swim in your water bodies, and you should be able to fish and enjoy a day out with your family. And that's not happening. So I had a bill this year that would require the Department of Environmental Protection to compile a list of each of the wastewater treatment plants around the state, over 1 million gallons per day, and have information on the treatment levels, if there's been impairments, if there's been spills, how old the facilities are, and use that as a way for the state to start prioritizing and being more strategic about how we spend our hundreds of millions and billions of dollars going forward. And that bill did not pass, but it did get some interest from people, and I think it is a strategy that we need to look at going forward so that we're not giving our money for projects just because of the member who is sponsoring them, but because that is truly where our need is to improve our water quality. A policy that I did get passed was something related to water quality, but after we've had a spill, unfortunately. This was a bill, House Bill 165, that I was the co-prime on, along with a representative from Palm Beach County, that would require municipalities and state agencies to notify the public within 24 hours or the next business day if there is sewage, if there's fecal contamination in the water that makes it unsafe for people to swim in. And astoundingly, this is not a policy that we had in place. There were recommendations for the Department of Health and for cities to do this monitoring and to post notifications, but it was not required. They used the word may instead of the word shall, and the effect of that is that if there was a pipe that broke and there was tens of thousands of gallons of wastewater dumping into our oceans or our beach areas, it sometimes would take days or weeks or even months for the public to be notified. And my co-prime sponsor, Representative Gossett Seidman, had a very personal experience of jumping in the water off her boat on July 3rd, not knowing until I think July 8th that there was a major sewage spill. But she did notice that something didn't smell right, something didn't look right. What she thought was some floating, dead seagrass was actually toilet paper. And that's just something that is unacceptable. But we did get that bill passed, and I'm excited for that to get passed so that people know if they're taking the time to bring them to the beaches, that it's going to be safe for them and their kids to swim. I was also able to get another bill passed related to digital voyeurism. And this is an area where if someone is videotaping someone for their own pleasure or profit or blackmail, other really negative things, that we update the statutes related to that and have some penalties that are commensurate with that, particularly if it's a person of in a trusted position, such as a family member, a coach, a counselor, or a clergy member. So as a member of the Democratic caucus in the super minority, I was really proud to get two bills passed this year. And last year was able to get an affordable housing policy included in the Live Local Act, which provided some tax abatement for some of these multifamily projects. This year, I also had another affordable housing bill that did not pass. There was some potential for it to be included in the tax package, but it did not make it. And it was specifically focused on something Senator Brandis alluded to, and that's accessory dwelling units. For us in St. Petersburg, we know that our council has made efforts to increase density in zoning in places that are appropriate. And so since we already have a policy from the Live Local that is giving developers of apartments up to 100% tax abatement if they're selling those units at affordable rates, why don't we provide that same incentive for the people who are living in our communities? So this policy would have provided up to 100% tax relief for people who have an accessory dwelling unit and rent it at the same affordable rate. So that means if you have a garage apartment in Old Northeast and you're renting it to a college student, a single parent, an aging senior, and you're doing it at an affordable rate, we think that there should be some benefit back to you. So that's another policy that I'm going to keep working on next year, because I think it just makes sense to add density in these places where we're able to. And another policy that did not pass this year, but I think is very appropriate for the area that we live in, is looking at some of our risks related to flooding. And in Shore Acres and Snell Isle and Riviera Bay, those communities that have had repetitive flooding from Idalia, from the storm that we saw in December, and we don't know which ones are coming in the future, but we know that those communities have repetitive flooding. And Pinellas County is actually in the top three counties around the state for repetitive flood loss. So we know that it is an issue. There's a program through the state called the My Safe Florida Home Program, which provides grants for homeowners, a 2-to-1 match up to $10,000 for people to harden their homes for wind resistance by putting new windows and doors and roofs on their homes. This bill would have extended that to some flood mitigation measures, which could be flood barriers, commercially available flood barriers, not the sandbags, which we know are largely ineffective, but some actual proven things that can help people in Shore Acres who may not have $250,000 right now to elevate their homes. They may not have the money to move to a different part of the city or to the county because of their family situation or their jobs. I fully recognize that is not a long-term solution, that there are places in Shore Acres, in Pinellas County, all around the state of Florida that are very vulnerable to flooding and some of the storms and the hurricanes. But I think that there should be a more coordinated approach that we're taking at the state, city, and at the national level. And that's why in the past year, I've held two town halls in Shore Acres to talk with the residents, understand some of their specific issues and their risk, bring people who are floodplain managers from the city, work closely with people at Pinellas County on this language in the bill that I sponsored with a senator from down in Fort Myers area. As a result, maybe one of the good things that's happened is the city has dedicated about $3.75 million to look at some flood improvements in Shore Acres, but that is just one piece of the puzzle. I've also been in close coordination with Congresswoman Castor, because we know that there are concerns at the national level with the National Flood Insurance Program, and it's going to take a concerted effort of all of these partners to look at areas along our coastlines or those that are impacted not just by the storms, but by the sunny day flooding that we see here in St. Petersburg and places like Miami. So that's something that I'm really focused on. I think it's the right thing for us to be doing. And I think it's important for leaders like you all to be part of those conversations, because they are going to be difficult conversations. No one wants to be told that their home is not safe to live in, and that the price that they can get to sell their house is not what they might have been able to get 10 years. But we have to be smart about where we're developing in the future, and the opportunities and the support that we're giving to people in our local communities. There were a couple preemptions that I was really concerned about in Tallahassee, and I'm often looking at some of the development issues and noticing things from my background that maybe some of the members are not as interested in or clued into. And one of them that's concerning to me is something related to what's called non-conforming structures. And this is a bill that I understand kind of came in response to the Surfside tragedy and wanting to be able to redevelop that condo, redevelop in that location. And this is essentially a preemption for local governments in areas that are in beaches and barrier islands. There's an area called the Coastal Construction Control Line. And that's, if you think of being on the beach, it's the areas that are closest to the water. Most of those areas are seaward or closer to the water of the Coastal Construction Control Line. And because those areas are more vulnerable, there are stronger standards and requirements for local governments when they permit things. Well, this bill that recently passed would allow local governments, it would prevent them from, okay, let's restate that. A non-conforming structure in this bill is defined as something that doesn't meet today's current building code standards. So if you think of a motel from the 1950s on the beach, it's probably not going to be built to the same building code standards as something that we would have built 2 years ago. So what this bill will do is it will allow for the demolition of those structures, except specific ones that are included in the National Historic Register, some things like that. But what's concerning to me is that once that structure is removed, the developer will now be allowed, and there's nothing that a local government can do to prevent them from putting a new structure in place at the maximum height and size of buildings in that same zoning district. So if you pictured any small beach town where you may have a couple two-story motels, and then you've got a 200-unit hotel down the street that's in the same zoning area, there's no power for that local government, St. Pete Beach or Treasure Island or Madeira Beach, from allowing all of those new high-rises to be built if it's within the same zoning area, a similarly situated structure. And so why I think there's a place for density in many, many parts of our state, I think it's irresponsible that we're going to be putting taller and larger structures in the places that are arguably the most vulnerable. So those are a few things that I was focused on, either in supporting or debating against trying to get amended. I was successful in killing a couple bills that would have impacted liability related to polluters and making it more difficult for people to recover damages if there's pollution. Other things related to development in the coastal areas that I thought were irresponsible. And I'm also proud of being able to secure funding in the final budget for five projects within the district. These are all subject to the governor's veto, but one of them would be just up the beach from us, a little over $500,000 for restoration of North Shore Beach. I have funding in the budget for water quality improvement in Pinellas Park and some of their stormwater areas. I secured $750,000 for USF St. Petersburg for a new human trafficking lab that is doing research on how to reduce human trafficking. So really innovative work there. Money for the city of St. Petersburg to build, to have a new fire ladder truck. Those are really expensive, but important for us to be supporting those first responders, and nearly $1 million for a jobs program for people who are working in solar energy and green jobs in urban agriculture. It's a program called Ideas for Us that is working around the state and helping people between about 18 and 30 years old get some of these good new innovative jobs. So those are some of the things that I'm proud of. As Senator Brandis mentioned, it was a session of missed opportunities in many ways that we did not make more progress on insurance, whether it's home or auto. Some of those, I think, just common sense affordable housing policies like the tax abatement for accessory dwelling units. I was disappointed that we could not get something like that across the finish line. And also some other preemptions that I think, Harvey, you mentioned, preempting local governments from setting living wages if there are construction projects, not being able to make those recommendations that a company who voluntarily responds to an RFP has to pay a certain wage for their workers to ensure that, you know, they have a chance of living and working in the place where they and their family want to live. So I will let you guys ask some questions, but it's nice that I was the only one here and got a little extra time. Thanks.
Member of the State House, Lindsey Cross, speaking to Suncoast Tiger Bay on WMTB LP St. Petersburg, Radio St. Pete, live at the St. Petersburg Museum of History.
There's plenty of food. Any questions for Rep. Cross? Going once, twice, Rep. Cross questions. Are you a member? Okay, come on.
So I'll answer the second question first. The legislature meets for 60 days every year. It's kind of on an even and odd cycle. So in even years like we are right now, it meets early January through early March. We get out earlier, so there's more time for us to campaign for reelection. On election years, the elections are in November. We get sworn in later that month. And then the 60-day session starts in early to mid-March and goes until May. So there's typically about 6 committee weeks before the official 60-day session. Those usually happen over about 3 months. So with a November 5th election, we will probably start meeting in late November, early December for a week or two before the holidays, and then have 3 or 4 more committee weeks in January and February before the 60-day session. And the first question, why didn't we make more progress? I did see something posted on social media about some of the priorities from the majority party, and they were largely focused still on culture war issues. Those priorities did not include property insurance. They were related to banning pride flags, protecting Confederate monuments, some bills that did not actually, won't get passed into law because there was not a Senate companion or because the Senate president didn't take up those bills, but there was not an interest from those in leadership to prioritize those issues. And that's unfortunate because that's, I think, what the people sent us up here to do.
Thank you, Representative Cross.